2021, a Fundação Estudar completa 30 anos. Para comemorar, a organização promove eventos neste ano para discutir sociedade, mercado e problemas complexos do mundo moderno com grandes referências. Nesse episódio, ouça a palestra de Uri Levine, empreendedor israelense que fundou o Waze, o maior aplicativo de trânsito e mobilidade do mundo. Aqui, ele discute economia digital e os ecossistemas de empreendedorismo do Brasil e de Israel. Confira!
Sitting someplace in the world, you don't even know where it is. I'm actually right now in New York City, and I'm presenting to people in Brazil, and I'm unable to see you. So this is really complex, and I really would like to travel to Brazil again. And in particular, because turns out that that way is so impactful in Brazil. And you know, my first time in Brazil was maybe 20 years ago, maybe even more than that. And I scheduled to meet people, and they told me, okay, there is no way that you can figure out how to get to our place, so we're going to meet you at your hotel. And then I would ask them, okay, and when? And they would say, in the morning. So the ability to actually schedule something and be there on time was nearly impossible before Waze. I think this is the biggest impact of Waze in Brazil, that you can plan, that you can actually be in places on the right time. And to a certain extent, I'm really, really proud to be the one that actually brought that value into the Brazilian market. I believe that Waze is the most significant in Brazil than any other place, even though that there might be more users in the US and traffic jams are more severe in India. I think that Brazil is the place that really the magic happened. What I would like to do this this morning, and you know, it was originally scheduled to be in Israel time 6 p.m., but I'm actually in New York, so it's morning time, is take you through a startup journey, right? So an entrepreneurship journey. What does it mean to build a startup, and why we are doing that, right? Because at the end of the day, there is only one reason. We're trying to change the world. We're trying to make it a better place. And in many cases, it turned out that I was successful in doing that. So I would like to share with you some of the key learnings. And look, entrepreneurship journey usually starts with a very strong emotion, either love or hate or something that leads into dream. And by the way, I hate traffic jams. I really hate traffic jams, right? And it leads into building your own dream and developing the passion until you realize that this is what you're going to do, right? And then you commit yourself, right? Because you realize that there is not only a roller coaster journey, and this roller coaster journey is really significant, right? So people might say, wait a minute, there are ups and downs in all the businesses in the world, and I would agree. But the frequency of those of building startups are dramatically more. And I think that Ben Horowitz is one of the founders of a very established, well-established venture capital firm in the U.S., at Reese & Horowitz, and he used to be a CEO of a startup. And he was asked whether or not he was sleeping well at night as a CEO of a startup. And he said, oh, yeah, I slept like a baby. I woke up every 2 hours and cried. And that's the reality. So it's a long roller coaster journey. And you have to commit, right? And the commitment is that you realize that, wait a minute, if you want to make that happen, everything that you got is going to go into that. Now, for entrepreneurs, there is no doubt what's next. It's always going to be the next startup. So for a second, I want you to think of entrepreneurship into going into this journey exactly like falling in love, right? So on one hand, you have the ventures, right? And there are many ideas that you think of. And eventually, there is one idea that you tell yourself, this is what I'm going to do, right? And then at the beginning, you spend time with your venture. You think about it from multiple perspectives. You think about the problem. You think about the solution. You think about the team you're going to build. You think about tomorrow morning. You think about the end game and so forth. The same if you're going on a date, right? So there are many dates that you go on, and eventually there is one that you tell yourself she is the one, right? Now, at the beginning, you only want to spend time with your date. You don't care about the rest of the world until until you feel confident enough. Going back to your ventures, you feel confident enough and you go and tell your friends, this is what I'm going to do. Now, the first reaction is always the same. This will never work. Right? And that's the nice guys, right? Because I heard people telling me, this is the stupidest idea that I ever heard. You take your date to meet your friends for the first time, and they're saying, she's not for you. This is where you disengage from your friends. So the good news is that you're in love and you don't listen to anyone else. The bad news is that you're in love and you don't listen to anyone else. But you really have to be in love in order to go into this journey, because this journey is going to take everything from you, everything that you got. And this is a really long journey. Now, the longest part of this journey is the one that says lack of traction. This is where you try everything and nothing happens. Right? I want you for a second to imagine that lack of traction is trying to cross a jungle, right? So you look around you and there are, you know, it's all around you, right? And you go all day long and there is still and you go to sleep at night and you wake up in the morning and there is only jungle around you. Now, you keep on walking, and even though that you're making baby steps progress, at the end of the day, at the end of this journey, you will be out of the jungle. And this is it, right? This is building a startup. It's a very, very long journey. It's a journey that is really complex. And one of the reasons that it's really complex is that this is a journey of failures. I want you to think about it, right? If this is a journey of failures and you're afraid to fail, in reality, you already failed because you're not going to go into this journey. Albert Einstein used to say that if you haven't failed, that's because you haven't tried anything new before. If you're going to try new things, you will fail. Now, once you realize that this is going to be a journey of failures and you are willing to fail, then the most important part to understand is that in order to increase the likelihood of being successful, you need to fail fast. Because when you fail fast, you have enough time to make another attempt, and another attempt, and another attempt, and another attempt. And eventually, by making those attempts that are based on the learning that you already have established, you increase the likelihood of being successful. Now, this is dramatic because one of the challenges in Latin America in general is that people are afraid to fail. The culture is there is a lot of fear of failures. And if you're afraid to fail, you're not going to try new things. And we need to encourage people to try new things. We need to encourage entrepreneurship because they're the ones that are going to change the world and make it a better place for us. So this is fairly dramatic. And I think that at the end of the day, it's one of the key learnings to building a startup is a journey of failures. Now, the most important part in all the startups, the most important part is understanding product market fit. If you figure out product market fit, you're probably on the right path of taking off. If you don't figure out product market fit, you will die. As simple as that. You never heard of a company that did not figure out product market fit. But for those that did figure out product market fit, I want you to think of the following, right? So just imagine, you know, all the apps that you're using every day, right? So Waze, WhatsApp, Uber, searching Google, whatever, Netflix. What is the difference between the application or the service that you're using today and the first time that you've used that? And the answer is that there is no difference. We are searching Google today the same way that we searched Google for the first time. We are riding Uber today the same way that we did for the first time. We are using Waze today for the same way that we did for the first time. Once you figure out product market fit, and in that sense, product market fit is the value that we bring to the users, we don't change that anymore. So once we figure out that, We don't change that anymore. And this is dramatic to understand. The journey of failures is until you figure out product market fit. Once you figure out product market fit, product does not change anymore. There are many other parts of the journey that each one of them is going to be a journey of failures again. But the product, we don't change that anymore. This is why it's the most critical part. If you figure out product market fit, you have an opportunity to make an impact. If you don't, you will die. Now, for me, building a startup is really easy, right? I always start with a problem. So think of a problem, a big problem, something that it's worth solving, something that the world will become a better place if you solve that. And then ask yourself, so who has this problem? Now, if you happen to be the only person on the planet with this problem, then I would say, you know what? Go to a shrink. It's going to be so much cheaper than solving a problem of a single person. Building a startup is expensive. It's not expensive by money. It's expensive by time, by effort, by commitment, by mindset, by everything. If not a lot of people actually have this problem, it's not worthwhile to solve it. Now, once you figure out that there are actually a lot of people with this problem, go and speak with those people and understand their perception of the problem. And only then go and build a solution. Now, if you follow this path and you really figure out this is a big problem and you understand the perception of the problem by the users and your solution works, it's guaranteed that you're creating value. If you start with the solutions, you might be building something that no one cares, and this is really frustrating. So if you're going to do a screen capture, if you would need this presentation later on, if you're writing notes, this is where you need to make those. These are, for a second, I will call that the most important key learnings that I had throughout my multiple journeys. And if you think of those every day, you increase your likelihood of being successful. So who are your users and what is their perception of the problem? The second that you stop thinking about your users, you are starting to build something that no one cares. And this is really frustrating. Make your mistakes fast, right? This is the answer to a journey of failures. You simply, by making the mistakes fast, you have more attempts and more mistakes to be made, and eventually you'll figure that out. And this is dramatic, right? If you think that you're going to build a product now for a few years and then launch that, rather than launch whatever you have right now and then get feedback from the users and keep on improving, those that are going to make the mistakes fast are simply going to get there faster. Product market fit, the most important part of all the journeys, of all the startup journeys, and it means value creation. If you don't create value, there is no reason for you to exist. Fall in love with the problem, not the solution. Every day, ask yourself whether or not you are making progress in eliminating the problem. And as long as you think of the problem and you think of the users, you're actually in a much better shape to become the market leader. Now, focus turned out to be very interesting because, you know, in a startup, you start with a mission and with a vision, and this is what you're going to do, right? But you realize that this is not only just a journey of failures. There is a lot of lack of traction, period, in a long period that you don't see that you're making progress, right? And then there are all people coming to you with different ideas. Why don't you do ways for bicycle riders? And I do ride my bike. Or for skiers, right? Or for pedestrians, or for public transportation, or for truck drivers. And it's really easy to get distracted. So focus is not about what we are doing. It's about what we are not doing. Because these are the harder decisions. And when you say, I'm not going to deal with pedestrians, I'm not going to deal with outdoor activity, I'm not going to deal with bicycle riders, I'm not going to deal with search, you remain focused on the commuters. And this is exactly what we did. And this is critical for all the startups. Now, the last one is actually, I didn't know that until until afterwards, where I was speaking to many entrepreneurs, and many of them, their startup failed, and I asked them, why? What happened? And about half said the team was not right. So I kept on asking, okay, what do you mean the team was not right? And so I had some group of people telling me we had this guy not good enough, this guy not. So not good enough was one reason. Another reason that I heard often was that we had communication issues, right? So something that I actually call ego management issues, right? But then I asked them the most interesting questions. When did you know that the team is not right? All of them knew within the first month. Within the first month, all of them knew that the team is not right. So you say, wait a minute. The problem was not that the team was not right. The problem was that the CEO did not make hard decisions. Making easy decisions are easy. Making hard decisions are hard. By the way, for all those startups, I have different t-shirts. This is for the last one. But when you think about it, you realize that, wait a minute, if the CEO knew and he didn't make the decision, the problem is very different. The problem is the leadership of the CEO. Look, people don't like to make hard decisions. People don't like to make decisions in general. But hard decisions, they really hate. And they're afraid of making those. And so in most of our organizations, when their decisions need to be made, it will go all the way to the top. In a startup with 20 or 30 employees, it will go to the CEO. And if the CEO does not make the hard decision, if there is someone in the organization that does not fit, and it doesn't matter because this guy is really, you know, way underperforming, or this guy is a complete jerk that no one likes to work with him, it doesn't make any difference. Everyone knows. Everyone knows that there is this guy in the organization. And the CEO doesn't do anything. That's actually pretty bad. That means that the CEO either doesn't know, which is not good, or does know and still doesn't make the hard decision. The result, by the way, is always the same. The top performing people would leave. Now, they would leave because they have a choice and they don't want to be in an organization that is unable to make a hard decision. So this is really, really important. And by the way, it turns out that in many cases, it is the most critical part. The ability to make hard decision is critical, and this is not happening in some cases. And then there is a research of Harvard Business School that went across 16,000 companies, and we're looking at the behavior of the CEO in the successful companies. And what it turns out is that the number one was actually making decision with conviction. Because there are no wrong decisions. There are right decisions or no decisions. So you know, I, in many cases, I share with, the creations of ways and the magic of ways. And to a certain extent, I would say, look, the real magic of Waze is that Waze creates all of its own data, right? So we crowdsource everything, not just speed traps and traffic jams, the map itself. The map itself is being generated by the drivers as they drive. And the result of that is that we were able to offer this application for free because everything is being regenerated by the drivers. And that is the magic of Waze. Now, if I would have a time machine and I will go back into 2007 and I will tell you this is what I'm going to build, you wouldn't believe me. You will tell me this will never work. So the magic of Waze is that it does actually work. But I want you to think about it for a second, right? This time machine going back into 2007, first version of Waze was running on a PDA. Remember? Long, long, long time ago, there were dinosaurs, and then PDA, and then Nokia phones. And today, we all have iPhones and Android, right? This long time ago is only 14 years, right? Just imagine that we will go back into 2007. I'm going to take away your iPhone. I'm going to take away your smartphone. I'm going to take away Uber, Waze, Facebook, WhatsApp, everything. Some of us will not even survive. This is how fast things are changing. But the journey of Waze was interesting because we started in 2007 and we say, this is what we're going to build. And we only raised capital at the beginning of 2008. If you think of building a startup as a roller coaster journey, then fundraising is roller coaster journey in the dark. You don't even know what's coming. This is how much more intensive and more challenging it is. And so it took us from the summer of 2007 until the beginning of 2008 to raise capital. And then we started to recruit people and building the real-time version, not a PDA version. And we only launched the product in Israel at the beginning of 2009. Now, in Israel, it was actually pretty okay. It turns out that everything is working. And then we launch globally. We basically say, wait a minute, if this magic works in Israel, it should be working everywhere. And so beginning of 2010, we launched Waze globally. Remember this slide? It simply did not work. It was not good enough. It was not good enough in Brazil. It was not good enough in the US. It was not good enough in Western Europe. It was not good enough in any place that really matters, right? It was actually good enough in four places outside of Israel. It was good enough in Latvia, in Czech Republic, in Slovakia, and in Ecuador. And that's it. And this is a journey of failures, of figuring out product market fit, right? And so you realize that it doesn't work. You go and speak with the drivers. They tell you what doesn't work for them. And then you build the next version, and you know that you have addressed all of those issues, and you know that this is it. And it's not. So you're doing it all over again, right? So you go and speak with the drivers. You realize what doesn't work. You build the next version. You know that this is it. And it's not. One iteration. Another iteration, whole year of iteration. In some of those, you're actually making a little bit of progress. Some of those, you're actually lesser than before. Some of those were actually leapfrog, which actually makes the difference. But you don't know which one is which. And this is why it's so critical to go in and, you know, going through this journey, iteration after iteration, listening to users, iteration after iteration, listening to users, and so forth. And then 2011, it started to be okay. By the way, there is no one in this room that is using Waze since 2010. 2011, absolutely yes. We started to become good enough in multiple places. In the US, that was one metropolitan after the other. So Los Angeles, and then San Francisco, and then Chicago, and then Atlanta, and Washington, D.C., and New York, one metropolitan after that. Even in Brazil, it was one city after that, São Paulo, and then Rio, and then Curitiba, and then one metropolitan after that. Europe, one country after that, or Italy, and then Netherlands, and then France, and then Spain, and then Sweden, one country after that. And in 2012, Waze was actually growing faster than the entire industry combined, right? So you take all in-car navigation systems and all navigation devices and all navigation apps and everything, Waze was outgrowing all of them together. And then in 2013, Google came with a proposal to acquire us, and we simply said yes. Now, at the time, the $1.1 billion was the highest price ever paid for an application. Now, the reality is that Facebook acquired WhatsApp a few months later for $16 billion. I'm pretty sure that if Facebook acquisition would have happened before, then we might have gotten more for Waze. But often people ask me whether or not it was the right decision to sell or not. And for that, I would say, look, there are right decisions or no decisions. Because when you make a decision, you don't know what it would be like if you choose a different path. We assume that Waze would have become the same way that it is today, with so many more users and so many more revenues and so forth. But we don't know that. So when you make a decision, by definition, it is the right decision. You wouldn't know what would have happened if you choose a different path. If you want a tool to make decisions, when I was young, one day I actually came to my dad and I said, look, I have two options and I don't know which one to choose, right? I can go here and I can go here. And so he reached out to his pocket and got a coin and said, I'm going to flip the coin. And before the coin drops, you're going to make the decision. We often know what's the right decision. We're looking for confirmation. The coin will drop. So a little bit about myself. So I'm building startups, right? This is what I'm doing, and all of them are trying to solve real problems. All of them, hopefully, are about doing good and doing well, and hopefully, you know, I would imagine that I want all of them to be successful. The reality is that probably not. But those that will make big impact. Some of my startups, ways we know, we move it, we know, refund it. Now, I know that this is COVID period and no one travels to Europe these days. But before COVID, if you travel to Europe and you bought goods, you're actually entitled to get the VAT back. Now, in Europe, this is about 20%. But turns out that 90% of the cases, people are unable to get their money back. There is so much complexity, right? You go to the airport and there is long line at customs. You go to the store and they tell you, I don't have the right form right now, but if you wait until tomorrow, wait a minute, I cannot wait until tomorrow, right? One day in Rome, I actually came there and I asked up the information, where is the tax-free shopping? Do you even have that? And they say, of course we have. It's in a different terminal. Right? And so you end up with different reasons that it simply doesn't work, and refunded basically say, wait a minute, what if we simplify that? What if all you have to do is scan the receipt, scan the boarding pass, and get your money back? As simple as that. And this is what we're trying to do. C3 actually turned out to be very successful in Brazil. And C3 is helping, is in the agriculture technology space. And the name suggests that it's actually seeing the trees, and this is exactly what it does. So we are flying over plantations of trees with drones. And at the level of a single tree, we can tell the farmer if this tree is healthy or not. And if it's not, what is the issue? So maybe water stress, nutrition, whatever it is, and actually increase the yield of the plantation by about 20%. So it turns out that Brazil have a lot of trees, and you know, some of the largest manufacturers of orange juice are actually in Brazil. And it turned out to be very successful there as well. Each one of those startups trying to address a single problem. And in many cases, the world will become a better place if we are able to address that. And look, over the ways, years, I heard so many people coming to me and say, thank you for ways. You saved me from a nightmare traffic jam. Or there was one guy that told me, you know what, I owe you thousands of dollars in speeding tickets. But I think that one of the best stories I heard a few years back, someone came to me and said, thank you, you saved my marriage. And I look at this guy and say, dude, I don't even know you. Right? I say, well, because of Waze, we don't argue anymore in the car. So you saved my marriage. So I ended up to be a marriage consultant in that sense. But I think that I owe the best story to my son. I have 5 kids, and one of them is 24 years old now. And when he started to drive some years back, he really liked to drive. So he would drive anywhere, right? And so one day I asked him to drive me to the airport. And he said, my phone is broken, I can't. I said, okay, what do you mean you can't? The car is right here. Here are the keys. Drive me to the airport. I said, no, Dad, you don't understand. My phone is broken. I don't know how to get there. So I was scratching my head for a second, and I said, you know what? I'm going to be in the car with you, and I will tell you how to get there. And then he asked me, and how would I come back? So we lose orientation, but not logic. Thank you.
Muito obrigado por ter acompanhado esse episódio do Lidera, podcast da Fundação Estudar. Você pode ouvir nossos episódios anteriores e próximos nas principais plataformas de áudio. O desenvolvimento desse episódio é da Súria Barbosa e a narração e edição são do Pedro Rodante. Até logo!